Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours.
It really is the way everything happens for me in my life. Everything that I do is because I want it for me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. It's me. Today on the show, I had the pleasure to speak with Mr. Clint Arthur. He is a celebrity entrepreneur who essentially helps his clients get in front of the TV. Get on TV, not in front. Getting in front of a TV, we can all do, but get on TV. And he helps them magnify their brand by getting on talk shows, whatever. And this is what Clint's known for. You can see more about Clint Arthur at clintarthur.tv. We have a pretty interesting conversation just around the concept of fame versus credibility, and you know, I'll let you decide where I fall on the whole side of this conversation and where Clint falls. But it was a great conversation. I love Clint. He was super open, and he's built an incredible life for himself, helping people, you know, live their dreams as well. So today on the show, Mr. Clint Arthur. Again, you can find him at clintarthur.tv. All right, I want to turn my attention to my book, The Crucible's Gift: 5 Lessons from Authentic Leaders Who Thrive in Adversity. So pre-order dates was supposed to be March 25th, and like everything in life, it doesn't typically go to plan as you had hoped, which means you need to be resilient and have flexibility. And good news, I have both of those. It should be up for pre-order, it said the 25th, but we're gonna go with 27th, 28th this week, midweek. So be on the lookout for that. But I also wanted to read to you another recommendation I got for the book by Miss Dori Clark. Now, if you don't know Dori Clark is the author of Stand Out and Reinventing You. She's also an adjunct professor at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. I love saying Fuqua. And she is awesome. I interviewed her in her condo in New York City, ironically across from the Trump Tower. And if you knew Dori, she is very liberal. So I love the irony in all of that. But this is what Dori had to say. We all face challenges. James Kelly's insightful new book shows us how we can leverage adversity to become better leaders and humans by embracing our true selves. And so I love getting these recommendations from these various leaders. And so I've already read you Dr. Marshall Goldsmith's. I will read you some other ones later this week, because over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to bring season one, all 235 or 50 episodes, to a close for season one. And I'm going to take a break until September, and I'm going to reinvent this podcast, the same great questions and format, but in a new concept, if you will, and I'll have more to say about that later on, closer to the launch date. So, all right, please follow me on Twitter, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, my YouTube channel, Facebook, LinkedIn. I feel like I may be a prostitute by the amount of places you can get me and the amount of social media that I do. So by all means, ignore, accept, engage. For the engage part of it, but yes. All right, have a great week, everyone, and I will talk to you tomorrow, and I will talk to you Wednesday and Thursday, and Friday I'm going to read an excerpt from my book for you to get a sense. And again, if you haven't seen my YouTube channel, I kind of talk about in the vlogs about different concepts from the book. So last week was self-compassion. Week before that was compassion. And this week, I'm going to talk about the concept of relatableness, which I think is one of these key ingredients that leaders tend to have. So be on the lookout for that as well. All right, have an awesome week, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. See you.
That people will buy, it is shocking. It blows my mind that people buy the pseudo versions of what I do from people who are trying to simulate what I do for my clients.
So why do you think people buy into it so easily?
Because people buy what's in front of them. Buying is a self-expression. Mm-hmm. And people want to express themselves. They have dollars, they have What is the currency where you are?
Dirhams.
Dirhams. They have dirhams. They have. They don't want to spend their bitcoins. That they don't want to spend. But they want to spend whatever currency they have because that's a way for them to express themselves and they feel like it's a way to take action. But unfortunately, there's especially in what I do, in the realm of marketing, there are a lot of marketers who are very good at marketing their stuff, but their stuff isn't very good for marketing the people who buy the marketing. Mm. So unfortunately, there are people who don't make smart buying decisions. However, I do think you're right. Today, the audience is very sophisticated. They have a very fine-tuned bullshit meter. They can see who is being real in a video and who is being fake. They can see if you're just saying lines or if you really believe what you're saying. However, my whole point about who you are being more important than what you actually do is a very interesting twist on your premise, in that I believe that certain things that you do, certain experiences that you have, will change you. Not everything will change you, but certain things will change you.
So give me an example. And give me an example of that, because I think that's a really interesting premise. Something, it's a kind of a journey I'm going on, so I'm kind of interested in your thought on this.
Okay, great. So in 2010, I was looking at my book sitting on the shelf in my office collecting dust.
Yeah. Right? Familiar story. I've heard that a lot. Yeah.
I published this book on CreateSpace. It was called What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School. And I thought it was going to fly. Who wouldn't want to buy the secrets of the Wharton Business School? What self-respecting business person or entrepreneur wouldn't want to put up $10 or $20 for that? And yet, I sold 8 copies my first year, and I sought out a mentor named Jack Canfield. Perhaps you've heard of his series of books, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He sold half a billion of them. I said, Jack, how do you sell books? He goes, well, Clint, you got to become somebody famous. You got to become special. You got to go on TV. So I hired a publicist, and I started paying her a lot of money to book me on television. And I did 4 shows, and I sat down in the living room of my house with my wife with my clips on my laptop, and I watched them with her, and I said, what do you think? And she said, I think you suck.
At least you got honesty.
Yeah, she's awesome. So I'm married to a very special woman, very fantastic woman, and I said to her, okay, well, I agree. I thought it would be easy to get on TV and do good because I've watched a lot of TV, and I thought, how hard could it be? But it's a lot harder to be on TV than it is to watch TV. And I said, I'm going to hire that publicist to book me on 10 more shows. And my wife goes, whoa. Why do you keep paying that lady? Why don't you book yourself on TV? Now, that's a really smart question. And it fell in the right ears because I'm the kind of guy who is up for a challenge, especially when it comes to saving a lot of money. So that night and for the next 3 months, I started waking up at 2:30 in the morning and cold calling TV stations all across the United States of America, large, small, big cities, little cities. I didn't care. I was just calling, trying to figure out how do you get on TV. And after 3 months, I finally booked my first appearance on the ABC television affiliate in Biloxi, Mississippi. But it was encouraging. And I started going on shows and booking myself on lots of shows. My first year, I booked 7. My second year, I booked 20. And the experience of creating that body of work out of nothing, that definitely changed me. That made me a way better salesman on the phone, I'll tell you that much. Mm. But then going on the shows, by that point, I got my 32nd television appearance was on NBC New York, the number one market in America. And that changed me. And going on all those shows changed me. And then I kept going on shows and I kept going on shows. And my 57th television appearance was on the Today Show. And Brooke Shields interviewed me with Willie Geist. And they asked me the question, which really is the question that changed my whole life. They said, you know, Clint, you ask yourself a great question every year. What's that question? And that was motivated by my experiences in the men's self-help movement. And that question is, if this is going to be the last year of your life, what would you want to accomplish? And living my life by that guiding star changed my life dramatically, because that's what I was doing that year. I was living my life as if I was going to die at the end of the year. That changed me. That made me not have fear and doubt and procrastination. That made me just say, you know, well, if I don't do it today, when am I going to do it?
So, I mean, if you haven't figured out, I started recording, so we're just rolling here. And so I guess what I'm trying to understand then, you know, from my audience perspective, is how do you define what you do now?
What I do now is I help authors, speakers, coaches, and entrepreneurs stand out in the eyes of their customers and prospects as being higher status than the prospects, the customers, and their competition. That's what I do.
So give me, I mean, the words you use make sense to me, but can you unpack that a little bit in terms of some of the aims or objectives that you would have for an author or whomever you're representing?
My darling daughter graduated recently from USC, and as I was telling you,
yes,
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were at the graduation, and I got selfie photos with them at the graduation, which anybody can go and should go look at on my website, clintarthur.tv, on the page that says About Clint, and you'll see one of my techniques. So I use three basic techniques to accomplish the goal of USC's entrepreneurship department. Now, when my daughter was a junior there, I had the great privilege of being invited to speak to the entrepreneurship department of USC's Marshall School of Business. And when the speech was over, the professor told me that nobody had ever said anything like that before in her class.
What did you say?
I talk about what I talk about right here, okay? And then she gave me and my daughter each a hat that had the logo of the USC Entrepreneurial Management Department, which is called the Grief School of Entrepreneurship. And the logo is the most genius logo of everything that I've ever seen in terms of logos in the world, the best logo I've ever seen. It is a circle of red dots, and it has one red dot outside the circle and slightly above the circle. And that is the real job of the entrepreneur. How do you stand out as being higher status than your competition? How do you do that? Genius logo. So I use three techniques. This is what I do. Let me unpack this for you. There are three techniques that I use that help authors, speakers, coaches, and entrepreneurs stand out as being different and better than their competition. Number one, going on TV news and talk show interviews and becoming a quote-unquote celebrity. That's who's on TV. Only celebrities go on TV. You've seen every celebrity on TV. And if you do what celebrities do, then you become a celebrity. And that goes to that whole part about how certain experiences change you. I really believe that. And when you start doing celebrity things over and over and over and over and over and over for years and years and years and years, at some point, I believe you actually become a celebrity. So I have all these pictures of me with all these celebrities. I take all the pictures so that my customers and prospects see me differently. But I'll tell you something, man. One of the pictures I got was me and John Travolta at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel in Honolulu, Hawaii. I vacation at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel in Honolulu, Hawaii for 2 months a year in a suite. And one of the years that I was there, John Travolta was there. I do a lot of stuff that celebrities do. I sent my kid to USC, right? I'm going to the Academy Award screening party that Elton John is throwing this year. I do a lot of stuff. Now, I'm not John Travolta, but I have become a celebrity.
So let me ask you a question there, because I think I have two streams of thought in my head right now. The first one is, there are two totally different streams, just so you know. My mind is bipolar at times. The first stream is, how effective is TV in the 21st century when majority of the audience now goes online way more often than they do traditional broadcast?
television is not about who is watching you at 7:30 in the morning in Des Moines, Iowa. If you recall, there was a movie called Anchorman and Anchorman 2.
By far, number one was way better than number two.
However, in number two, Will Ferrell did a promotional stunt where he went to
South Dakota. Yes.
And he hosted a CBS newscast in South Dakota or North Dakota, one of the two. And I typed into Google Will Ferrell, North Dakota. And I found that he made worldwide headlines from that little publicity stunt by going on a TV show that no one watches. And it helped propel Anchorman 2 to more than $250 million in box office sales. Because he made worldwide headlines by leveraging that appearance. And this is what I say to my clients, my students. I call them my magic messengers. Because once you know how to book yourself on TV using my magic messenger formula, a mathematical equation of what to put in a proposal so you get booked, once you know how to do that, then you have the magical power of being able to get on TV anytime you want for free. And as a result, you get ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox TV news producers, many of whom are Emmy Award-winning professionals in their fields, and their hundreds and thousands or millions of dollars worth of equipment and studios and talent and editorial staff and lighting designers, all that working for you to create free marketing videos for you that you can then repurpose in a myriad of ways that I teach my students how to do. And then you have what I call mega media. You have TV news clips that you can then repurpose into social media. And when you put old media onto new media, it becomes mega media. And that's exactly what Donald Trump did. And that's exactly why Donald Trump is the president of the United States today, demonstrating the power of television.
So, okay. Let me play devil's advocate a little bit here from my perspective. And I feel like, let me see if I understand you correctly, because I feel like the TV industry has shifted so much in the last 5 years. You know, the rise of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and all that, it has changed the way that we consume, and mobile has changed the way we consume TV on a daily basis. So what it sounds like to me is it's less about the actual TV show in the moment, and it's more about repurposing the material to show your expertise to a larger audience via social media or via other ways to distribute the content, repurpose it. Is that another way to understand it?
I can see how you would think that. And to a certain extent, you're right.
However, you're telling me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. To a certain extent, you are right. But it's a much bigger equation. You see, people are very simplistic in their approach to everything. And that's good. But becoming a celebrity entrepreneur is not a simple thing. It's a very sophisticated ambition. And it's also a very sophisticated equation to make it happen. And television is a very sophisticated medium because, yes, you're right. It's more about how you repurpose television than it is about the moment. However, going on each of those shows is going to change you through the experience. And the value of that is enormous. When you go into a TV studio and you have no authority, you have no real power, you have no control, you have no previous knowledge of what the circumstance is going to be, and yet with your personal power, you can then turn that into a monstrously powerful and valuable piece of marketing through your personal power. So that experience will change you and give you a lot of value. But in addition to that, it is the journey, it is everything that comes from the, like, I teach my students that they should be making multiple marketing videos about each television appearance. So it's leveraging everything that you're doing. However, there are certain times when you go into a TV studio, and depending on the show and depending on the time and the timing of the show and of the world, you may luck into a huge windfall of audience. I'm not saying that you should expect the TV station's audience to be your customers and prospects. Most oftentimes they're not, but sometimes you'll collect a lot of leads. Like one of my clients went on a 5-minute interview in Chicago and collected 687 leads from a 5-minute appearance. That's not going to change your life, but it's pretty good for collecting leads. I'll tell you that much.
That's great. 5 minutes. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the way I look at it, you're the expert in the space. So I'm playing the geeky academic guy thinking about the industry. And I feel like the TV works great if your product or service is a particular niche, right? Like, if my audience is the stay-at-home individual, whether it's, you know, dad or mom, you know, TV may be a hugely benefit for that one-off. But I feel like to use it to create credibility, that's a different equation, right? The credibility that you get from TV is to me the most, that's the impact that you want, the credibility.
Yeah.
And, you're gonna disagree again?
No, yes and. See, I actually took
it's improv like a class this, one yes, time. I was gonna say this is a groundling state, isn't it? Yes and.
Yeah. Yes and you know, my original way that I got out of, see, so after I graduated from the Wharton Business School with a 4.0 GPA in entrepreneurship, I went home to get the attaboys from my parents. And I originally went to Wharton because when I was 14 years old, I read about it in a book. I searched it out, investigated it in the encyclopedia, and saw that Wharton was the place where the greatest leaders of industry, the captains of industry, would send their kids to be educated about business. And I thought, if I could graduate from the greatest business school in the world, then maybe my parents would stop arguing so much. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a kid, you think everything is your fault. And I thought if I could become somebody special, that maybe that would fix that. So I go home with my 4.0 sheepskin and I'm sitting on the couch. And what happens? They get into the biggest argument of all time. And my dad storms out of the house and slams the door. And I'm sitting on the couch in the living room where I grew up. And I turn to my mom and I say, you know, Mom, the way he resents you all these years, have you been cheating on Dad? And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what kind of a smart-ass kid asks his own mother a question like that? And then I'm thinking, why isn't she answering the question? And then she says, he's not your real father. Your real father was a doctor at the fertility clinic. And you look just like him. And so at that point, everything I thought I knew about who I was, suddenly, poof, gone. I sure as heck didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up anymore. And so I told the investment bank, no, thank you. I don't want to come to work on the 87th floor, number one World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Right? Lucky for me. And then I moved out to Hollywood and started to go on auditions and writing screenplays. And that fast forwards all the way through the 1990s to December 31st, 1999. And where were you? Were you getting Y2K money out of the ATMs? Were you partying with family and friends? I was behind the wheel of a yellow cab that night, driving people all around. And a couple of the people in the backseat of my cab were MBA interns for Goldman Sachs. And they were talking about this high up executive. Did you hear about Mr. Carrera? He was the last partner they made right before the IPO. He cashed out $100 million. I turned around and I said, are you guys talking about Chris Carrera? He said, how do you know Mr. Carrera? Chris Carrera was a pledge in my fraternity at Wharton when I was the pledge master. I used to make those little punks dance around the living room with their underpants on top of their head. And here this guy cashed out $100 million. And I'm driving a cab for my sixth year. And that night, I swore an oath to myself that I was going to do everything I could to change who I was and how I was showing up. And so I started doing personal self-help work. I walked on fire with Tony Robbins. I did Toltec wisdom studies with Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of The Four Agreements. I did men's power circles and ceremonies. And I did everything you could do to change. I even took a class called Personal Transformation. It was a six-month seminar with this business coach named Paul Roth. And sure enough, as I started changing on the inside, I started changing my life on the outside, and I got out of taxi driving and I got into selling gourmet food, specifically butter. And that's a whole long story in itself, but I became the butter king of America, selling butter. And as soon as I started making a lot of money, I attracted this beautiful woman who became my wife, who told me I sucked on TV. Now, later that year, one of the seven appearances that I booked my first year was on ABC Chicago. And when I was in Chicago, I went there 2 days early because I didn't want to have any problems with my flight and miss my appearance. So I went there a couple days early and I'm sitting in my hotel room thinking, well, what should I do? And I thought to myself, well, why don't I make some cold calls and try and sell some butter? Now, my butter product is the top product in the world. It's called the best butter on earth. Really? And I sell it to only 5-star and 5-diamond hotels and resorts. Like, if you've ever had butter at Bellagio, thank you. All the butter that's on bread and butter in Bellagio is mine. Okay? At one point during the boom, I had every major 5-star restaurant in Vegas was my client. You know, Jean-Georges Van Grichten, who has his restaurant. He's Donald Trump's favorite chef. He has his restaurant at the Trump Hotel in Columbus Circle. It's called Jean-Georges. That was one of my very first clients in New York City. So I'm in Chicago, and I start calling up chefs. And, of course, chefs, these kinds of chefs, they never answer their phone. They're too important to answer their phone. So I'm leaving messages. Hey, chef, this is Clint Arthur. I'm the president of 5-Star Butter Company, and I'm here in Chicago to appear on the ABC Morning News. And I'm wondering if you'd like me to come to your kitchen after I'm done at the TV studios and let you taste the best butter on earth. My cell phone number is blah, 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 blah. And these guys are actually calling me back after leaving them voicemails. And they're saying, yes, yes, we want you to come. We want you to come after the TV station. And as a result of those cold calls and voicemail messages and one TV appearance in Chicago that none of them watched, I ended up with 5 new clients for years who were faxing me PO after PO after PO. It turned out to be like $60,000 a year in my pocket for years. And the clients were the Palmer House Hilton, the Park Hyatt Chicago, the Intercontinental Chicago, the Trump International Hotel in Chicago, and the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago. 5 top hotels, and there were only 10 prospects. I took over 50% of the market by leveraging television that none of them even watched.
So I need to back up because I'm trying to understand how you got into butter from a cab to TV. So I'm trying to put the puzzle together a little bit in my mind.
So 153 phone calls later, I find this woman who has her own little dairy farm with 20 cows, and I convinced her to make me a special batch of butter without pasteurizing the cream first. And she had 2 conditions. Number 1, I had to pay for it in advance. And number 2, I had to have FedEx come and pick up the box the same day it was ready because she did not want to have that dangerous, illegal product on her farm. But see, I convinced her to make it for me because I said, hey, I'm part of the raw primal community in Southern California, and all of us are trying to heal our bodies with raw nutrition, and many of the people here have cancer and other life-threatening diseases, and this is true. A lot of people were using the raw nutrition and a lot of these remedies, and if you have some disease that has never been able to be cured, you should check out Ajahn's Vandeplanet's book, because that guy cured himself from such painful diseases, and he got his son out of a coma after a car accident using raw nutrition. So she agreed to do it, and I'm coming back from the gym one day, and I see this box sitting on the back of my boat. I had completely forgotten all about it. And I'm like, what the heck is that box on the back of my boat? I'm living on a little boat in Marina del Rey because it was the cheapest way you could live. This is during my whole taxi driver, actor odyssey, and it was $282 a month to live on this boat in Marina del Rey, including a parking spot. So that was the cheapest way I could survive and sustain my dream of becoming an actor, screenwriter, movie star, filmmaker, like my idol at the time, who was Spike Lee, who was all of those things. So I'm coming back from the gym. I see the box. I'm like, what the heck is that box? I climb on board. I rip it open. And what's in the box? 41 quart deli containers of yellow, beautiful butter. And I immediately call the chiropractor. And I say, hey, man, guess what? He goes, what? I go, I have 40 pounds of raw butter on my boat right now. He goes, bring me some. So I go over to his boat. He's a chiropractor who practices on a boat in Marina del Rey. I go over to his boat with a pound of butter, and he sticks his finger in it, and he licks it, and he goes, yep, that's raw butter, all right. He goes, sell it to me. I go, okay, give me $10 for it. I had just paid $5 for it. He goes, okay, great. He gives me $10. And I go, what am I going to do with the rest of it? He goes, why don't you call up my friend? He's the one who runs the raw milk distributorship in Southern California. Maybe he would have a use for it. Well, that guy became my first customer. He bought every pound of raw butter that I could import into California illegally, because transporting raw butter across state lines is a federal offense. And I became the largest shipper of any item by weight for the FedEx station in Marina Del Rey, California. I was bringing in all the butter that I could get. And that's how I got into butter.
I love that story because it really is entirely random. And it's almost like a snowball effect, right? Like, you started doing it just to see if you could, and it became a business at the end of the day.
It really is the way everything happens for me in my life. Everything that I do is because I want it for me. So I wanted to get on TV without having to pay a publicist. So I figured out how to do it. And then people said, how do you do that, Clint? So I started teaching my friends. And then I started teaching business associates. And then I started marketing that service. And today, I'm the only one in the world who teaches you how to book yourself on local TV news and talk show interviews for free. And it's part of my seven-figure information marketing empire. Then, and we started this whole thing talking about the three-pronged attack that I have for differentiating myself from my competition and positioning myself as higher status than my customers, prospects, and competition. So TV is one. The second one that I use is speaking at prestigious places. I started going to a lot of seminars. One of the seminars I went to was called Experts Academy. And at Experts Academy, they teach you how to use what you know to make a fortune. And the teacher of Experts Academy is this very, very brilliant, charismatic young man named Brendan Burchard. And Brendan always says this exact thing every single time he speaks. He says, gosh, I'm just a kid from Montana, and yet I've had the great privilege. Brendan always says, I'm just a young kid from Montana, and yet I've had the great privilege to share my message on the same stage as Sir Richard Branson and the Dalai Lama, at great corporations like GE, Accenture, and Amazon. And I've seen Brendan talk probably 50 times. He says it every time. Then I have another mentor named Dan Kennedy. Dan Kennedy is probably like the opposite of Brendan. He's an old, curmudgeonly, gruff person who has a reputation for not being friendly and not smiling. He never smiles. Brendan is only smiles. Dan Kennedy never smiles. But Dan Kennedy has been a professional speaker, copywriter, seminar leader for like 40 years. And with Dan Kennedy, I've seen him speak about 50 times as well. Every time he speaks, it is never more than 5 minutes into his speech before he says, when I was in the arenas speaking in the Peter Lowe success seminars with George Bush and Colin Powell and General Schwarzkopf and Donald Trump. And I started thinking about those two things, those two statements. They talk about where they spoke. He spoke in the arenas. Brendan spoke at great corporations like GE, Accenture, and Amazon. They spoke with famous people. And you put those two things together, a famous place with famous people, or a high status place like an arena, some place special with special people. That is what I call a million-dollar positioning statement. It positions you as a person who makes a lot of money as a speaker. And I don't know if you do any speaking in front of large audiences, but speaking is one of the most profitable ways to get in front of customers and prospects. I mean, you get in front of the right audience, you can make a lot of money. I've made as much as $400,000 in a day speaking in front of the right audience. And the speech that I gave to make that 400, it was 15 minutes long. So it's very, very profitable. I'm not saying that happens every day,
yeah,
but that's what's possible. And it happened because I created my own million-dollar positioning statement. I wanted to have a positioning statement like that. I wanted something that was going to be unassailable and of the highest status possible for a positioning statement. And what I set my goal on was Harvard. I wanted to be able to say, hey, I've shared this message at Harvard. And you know what? Today, I honestly can say, and I do say every time I speak, as soon as I get on the stage, what I'm going to tell you today is exactly the same message that I shared with the Entrepreneurship Club of Harvard Business School. It's the same message that I shared with the leaders of our nation's future at West Point. It's the same message I shared at USC's entrepreneurship department when my daughter was a junior there. And that message is, who you are is more important than what you actually do. Your number one job as an entrepreneur needs to be, must be, should be, can only be, if you're going to thrive, raising your status in the eyes of your customers and prospects.
So can I ask you a question, Clint? Because it's something that's kind of been in the back of my head for a while as you're talking and sharing these awesome stories, and thank you for sharing them. I keep going back to the word, why do you do what you do? What about it gets you excited?
That's what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about is I do these things because I want them. I do what I do because I want it for me. I wanted to speak at Harvard. So what did I do? I created a conference for thought leaders at Harvard. And I don't know how I did this. I was somehow able to work my way into a relationship with the Entrepreneurship Club of Harvard Business School. They're my official sponsor of the event. And I wanted that alignment with them. I created it for me, and then I offered it to my clients because I knew it would be, if it was helpful for me in getting my message out, it would be helpful for them in getting their message out too. Everything I do is for me because I want it. And that's the second prong of my business.
But where does that come from? That whole sense of I'm doing this because I want it. Where does that come from? I think that's a really interesting statement.
I think it comes from the fact that I spend a lot of money on mentors, and I study these mentors and what they do. And I'm trying to emulate what the mentors do. That's what it is. I mean, my top mentors are using this $1 million strategy, so I want to use that. That's what makes you powerful. If you can't get on, you need to get on a stage. When you start out your introduction of your presentation, you need to step on the stage and say something that's going to capture people's attention immediately. And what I have found is there are two ways to do that. Number one is with this $1 million positioning statement. And the second thing is Harvard. Harvard seems to fascinate people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you say Harvard and it gives you instant credibility and authority. And I combined the two into one strategy.
No, and I agree with you that the credibility is critical for placing you in a spectrum of expertise. Absolutely agree with that 100%. I guess, you know, for me, when I hear the way that you're talking and you're passionate about what you're doing, which I think is great and important, it always seems to come back to, you know, at this point of your career, it's still about it seems like you're still trying to prove something in a way. I don't know. Maybe that's just the way I'm interpreting it. And I'm not trying to read too much into it, but maybe I am. I don't know.
I was talking about this with one of my clients and friends. Luckily, he just got out of the hospital. I called him the other night when he was in the hospital with pneumonia. Lucky for me, and this is one of the benefits of what I do, I deal with a lot of people who are really smart, make a lot of money, and are really passionate about what they do. And this guy's name is Rondi Lambeth. He's one of America's top credit experts, credit repair. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he has a TV show with Grant Cardone. You know who Grant Cardone is?
I'm notoriously awful with names, so I'm going to go with no. Sorry.
Okay. Grant Cardone is one of the top sales experts in the world. Okay. Really, really active on social media. And he has a whole network of quote-unquote TV shows that are produced for his Cardone TV network. Mm-hmm. So Grant Cardone was talking to Rondi about this. And he said, Rondi, when is it going to be enough for you? And that I thought was just so funny because Grant Cardone, it's never enough for Grant Cardone. He's constantly going on TV promoting stuff. Constantly. He's constantly putting himself in high status marketing positions. And what I said to Rondi is what I honestly believe. When does a shark stop swimming? Never. And when will an entrepreneur stop promoting themselves and their career and their status. Never. It never stops. Donald Trump never stops. And I keep mentioning him, not necessarily because of the politics. Really, I mention him because he is a celebrity entrepreneur. And in that regard, he's the inspiration for everything that I do. He became the highest paid speaker in the world. He would get $1 million to show up for an hour. I saw him once at an arena being interviewed for 1 hour, and he got paid $1 million. That's success as a speaker. And he would go on TV all the time and still does. You talk about, hey, is TV dead? He's constantly on TV. And there's a reason why he's constantly on TV, because TV is not dead. TV is thriving. In fact, when my daughter was at USC, and she only graduated a few months ago, she told me, and she was in the Honors Film School program, she said, at USC, our current time in history is known as the golden age of television. And indeed, people are watching more television than ever. More than ever. They do it in different ways. They time shift. They're not restricted to must-see TV time schedules. But people are watching more TV than ever. And when you go on TV, it's more valuable than ever today, because everybody's on YouTube. Everybody's on Twitter. Everybody's on Facebook doing Facebook Live. Everybody's doing all the free stuff on social media that you can do. And that's why it's no good. You have to do what people are not able to do or not willing to do in order to be able to stand out.
And I totally respect, I mean, I have a totally different perspective on it, but I think that we each path that we go on is our own path, and each individual defines success in a different way. So it kind of leads me to just a few more questions. You've been awesome with your time, Clint. I really appreciate it, and some really great stories. Like, I guess, how are you defining success for Clint? You know, because I feel like early on you talked about a little bit of a story about your family. We never really got into it, which I tend to do, but it sounded like you kind of grew up in a tumultuous environment. And within that environment, you alluded that you went to Wharton, so maybe your family would pay attention to you, or at least give you accolades. Instead, they kind of fought with themselves anyways in that moment. And so I always kind of wonder, like, is this definition of a success for you trying to assail to the top financially, which is totally fine. I mean, that's what America is about, is everyone has an opportunity. But is that one of your goals, because it's a way for you to kind of get accolades for your success?
Sorry, I told you my 57th television appearance was on the Today Show.
Which is amazing. I would pay to do that. I would kill to be on that show for a book.
Anybody would pay. Yeah. But you can't pay. That's the beauty of it, is you can't pay. You can only earn it. And they called me. I woke up one morning and there was a voicemail message on my iPhone. It said, "Hi, Clint. This is Allie calling from the Today Show. We were wondering if you could join us for a live in-studio appearance on New Year's Eve to talk about how to have a great new year. If you would, give me a call back. Again, this is Allie from the Today Show." And I thought this was somebody pulling a joke on me, because my wife's named Allie. I mean, the whole thing sounded so absurd. I really thought it was a joke. Luckily, I still have the audio. And I called her back. I like woke up. I'm like, I played the message for my wife. I'm like, listen to this. It was 7-Eleven in California, and I was at a 2-week raw vegan retreat trying to lose weight. And I do some voice warm-ups, and I call her back, and I said, "Hey, Allie, this is Clint Arthur calling you back." And she goes, "Oh, hey, Clint, thanks so much for calling me back so quick." Of course I call her back quick. I know she's like dialing to find guests. I got to beat every other person in the world to get this spot. So I said, she goes, "By any chance, are you going to be in New York for New Year's Eve?" I said, "Of course I'm going to be in New York for New Year's Eve." Meanwhile, I was scheduled to be in San Diego for 2 weeks around New Year's. But we bought all new clothes. We get on a plane. We book a hotel. We go to New York. I go on the Today Show with Brooke Shields. And the day afterwards, I'm sitting in my hotel suite looking at the skyline of New York City. My wife is out shopping. And I'm all alone in the suite. So I had an errand that I needed to do. I had to call up UPS and set up an account, because I needed to ship a bunch of stuff for some kind of an exhibit I was doing at a convention. And I'm on hold with UPS. And suddenly I have this thought. What if I had a heart attack right now? I would probably be dead in this hotel suite when my wife came back, because no one would help me. And I was okay with that. I looked at my life And I had just been on the Today Show, and I had shared my unique message with the world. If this was going to be the last year of your life, what would you want to accomplish? Live as if there is no tomorrow, because you don't know if there's going to be a tomorrow. You really don't know. In fact, the first time I led that program with the public, one of the people who signed up was a 32-year-old kid named West White, who went to sleep on October 21st, 2010, and did not wake up. And I went to his funeral because I happened to be in the city where he died. And I actually spoke about it at his funeral and how he was going for it. He was living as if it was going to be the last year of his life. And he lived his life with gusto all the way to the end. And I shared that message. And I felt some kind of odd sense of satisfaction and calm and accomplishment because I had made my unique mark on the world. And I had done what no one thought I could do. I had made it all the way to the Today Show. And I looked up Maslow's hierarchy of needs and, you know, self-expression, unique contribution. That's the top of the pyramid. I accomplished that through TV. And then I also thought about how I felt when my friends, like my friend Veronica Gray, who was my first client as a TV publicity student. It took her 2 years. Her 38th television appearance was on Good Morning America, and she made it all the way there all by herself. And she gave me a testimonial as an author. I tried everything to promote myself and promote. I hired publicists and spent thousands of dollars, and I was never able to get anything until I met you, Clint, and it helped me to get all the way to the Today Show. Or my client, Sandy Massori, who she decorates parties and events with balloons. And she used my work to get all the way to the Today Show. Or my friend, Dr. Kellyanne, who is now a regular recurring guest on Dr. Oz, talking about nutrition. And I tell you, the times when I have felt the closest to healing this wound. See, I look back on everything that I'm doing, and it's like, what is really driving me? I'll tell you what's driving me. I've been hoping on a subconscious level that somehow I could get, that maybe my dad, my biological father, would find me. Maybe one day daddy would love me. And that's the wound that's been driving me. And the only thing that I've found in my life that's been able to heal that wound has been making my contribution on big shows or on big stages, or watching my friends get to make their unique contributions to the world too.
Well, that's awesome. And again, I think that's what I was getting to. I think there was something else driving you besides meeting the celebrities, right? Like at the end of the day, we all have something inside of us that drives us. So for me, you know, writing a book for me, whether it's 8 people who read it, which would make me sad, but there's a definite fact that could be the case. But if there's 8 people or 8,000 people, I wrote the book out of a place of wanting to feel like I've accomplished something, like something on my own, something that gives me a sense of self-respect. And, you know, this is coming from someone who has 2 masters and a PhD who was never supposed to do that. And I still don't have that feeling that I think I should have. And so, you know, so I can appreciate this journey that you're on. I just have one more question, and I'm going to let you run. And I ask everyone this question. But before I go, I want my audience to know that you, Clint, are a 3-time author, at least that's what I'm seeing now, The Speaking Game, Break Through Your Fear of Public Speaking on Local TV. And the other big one was What They Teach You at the Wharton School of Business School. Those are the big 3, right?
I have a lot of books. One of my books is called The Greatest Book of All Time. It's the last year of your life experience, complete with audios and videos embedded in the book. So if you're reading it on Kindle, it's like a whole 1 year personal transformation and personal development experience with me as your guide. It's a fantastic book. Then I have a book I wrote for my daughter. When she was a year old, her mom and I split up. That's when I moved onto the boat. I moved out of the house and moved onto a boat. And when she was about a year old, I wrote and illustrated a little children's book for her, because we always used to read bedtime stories. You got kids, you know how it is. Good Night Moon and all of those.
Yeah.
I made one, Good Night Moon. It was called Daddy Loves You.
Yeah.
And I wrote it because I wanted her to know that even on the nights when I wasn't with her, because I only had one night a week, even on the other nights, Daddy always loved her. And I published that book on Amazon as a self-published book. And that book, 2 things are remarkable about that book. Number one, it has helped me to get on a lot of huge TV shows. It used to be, if you were a self-published author, you couldn't get on anything. And I'll tell you what, in the publishing industry, there is nothing that is lower status than a self-published, self-illustrated children's book. That's a pure vanity project. And in a lot of ways it is. However, that book has propelled me onto TV shows all across the country, even as high as Chicago. So when you know what I know, you can use any book to help you get on even the biggest TV shows. And in a lot of ways, people say, if you could get on Good Morning America and it's going to be your last TV show and you had 3 minutes to talk about whatever you want, what would you talk about? I would talk about Daddy Loves You. I really would, because it's so important. But the other thing that's really important about Daddy Loves You is that I thought I wrote it for my daughter, but as you can probably put the pieces together and connect the dots, really I was writing it for me.
It's funny how your childhood just has such a major impact, right? Like, it just, you know, it's, my dad died when I was 20, and my mom, literally, this is 23 years ago at this point, 24 years ago, he's been passed, and he died when he was 49. And so in my head, I was convinced I was going to die at 49, just because he had congestive heart failure. It runs in the family. My grandfather had it. Six of my grandfather's brothers or sisters had something similar to it. So, I mean, like, it's just in the family. So I thought at 49, I was it. And so I've been pushing so hard this last, like, 3 years, and I kept thinking, okay, 44 this year, I've got 5 more years to go, and then who knows, right? Like, in my head. Like, so imagine thinking that way every year, and I push myself harder and harder, and I've got 4 kids, and I'm thinking, okay, I've got to get some money saved, I've got to get prepared. And so I talked to my mom last week, and she goes, well, she's like, oh, yeah, well, you were talking about Dad. And I said, well, do you miss him? She's like, yes, of course. And she goes, you know, it's unfortunate that he got a virus in his heart and then enlarged his heart, and that was the congestive heart failure. And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, well, yeah, it was a virus that caused the heart failure. And I was like, wait, where was this the last 24 years? I could have used that information, because I was completely out of, you know what I mean? That's a completely random thing. It's not because he was unhealthy. It was because he caught a virus, and that was what actually killed him down eventually. And she left that tidbit of information out. So psychologically, I've been killing myself for about 23 years at this point. And it just came about last week that that's actually not even true. And I was like,
that's the scary thing about living the last year of your life, is, like, you know, a lot of people will say, well, what if you make it happen? That's the really scary part about it, is you could even shorten your own life. And maybe you have done that with this whole story that you've told me. And a lot of people, like one of my friends from high school told me that her father was on a canoe trip. He was in such great shape. He was so far away from civilization on this canoe trip that he had a heart attack and died because they couldn't get him any help, because he was so healthy. He was able to go so far away, but then he had a heart attack. I mean, for a man to make it into his 50s, now I'm 52 years old, it's a great accomplishment. And maybe a lot of men start to feel their mortality, and maybe that's why men in their 50s are so productive and earn so much more money than at other times in their lives, because they are feeling this burning fire. So I don't think it's a negative thing that happened to you, man. I think it's probably driven you to achieve higher than you normally would have.
No, and I would agree with that. I would agree with that for sure. And just to kind of go back to the books really quick, I didn't even realize I'm going through. You have Breakthrough Your Upper Limits on TV. You've got The Income Doubler, which is a course. You've got the 21 Performance Secrets of Donald Trump. For me, I find that hilarious because I have my own personal opinion, but I know that I can tell you have a lot of respect for Donald Trump. So I'll leave it at that. But this is my favorite one. Maybe this is a different Clint author. I don't know. But the 9 Free Secrets of New Sensual Power. Is that you too?
That is, gosh, that was a long, long time.
2002.
That's a long, long time.
That one I want to read just to see what you thought in 2002.
It's a great book, man.
So my last question for you, and I'll let you do your day here. For where you're at and what you do, how do you, Clint, how do you define happiness?
My definition of happiness is doing what I want, with whom I want, when I want, and how I want. I just live my life exactly the way I want to live my life. And people say, where do you live? I live in New York, Los Angeles, and Honolulu, Hawaii. We spend 2 months of the year in a suite at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. What does that look like? We go to sleep when we want. We wake up without an alarm clock. We go down and swim in the tropical waters. We drink coffee and play backgammon and Uno. And I talk on the phone for a couple hours with clients. I mean, like 2-3 hours a day, I talk on the phone with clients. And we walk around with our dog and try to eat healthy. And, you know, that's my picture of a great day. And I try to do that as many times as I can. And right now I've got it wired so I can do it for 60 nights and 61 days in 2018.
That's awesome. Well, Clint Arthur, thank you for your time, energy, and willingness to sit down with me on Executives After Hours.
My pleasure. I'm excited about this. Was a great interview. Thank you very much. You're a tremendous interviewer, and I'm really looking forward to listening to this back. Thanks.
Thank you.